Hey, folks, I know there are lots of business owners who listen to this show. Maybe some of you never planned on running a business, but now here you are. One thing you've always got to keep in mind is how much you're spending on your operating costs. That's one of the first things we had to keep in mind with WTF. And with things costing more today than they did when we started, you want to keep your expenses down. To reduce costs and headaches, be smart and use NetSuite by Oracle, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. Reduce IT costs, cut the costs of maintaining multiple systems, improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/WTF for more. That's NetSuite, NetSuite.com/WTF.
Lock the gates!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fuck nicks, what's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Welcome to it. It's a holiday, correct? Some of you are not working. What's happening? It is a holiday. Well, I hope your day is going as well as possible. I find it difficult sometimes to not think that my day-to-day life on some level, because of the nature and reality of the world, is some exercise in denial. But I don't know what the alternative to that. It's terrible what's going on in Israel. It's terrible what's going on in Ukraine. It's terrible. I can't, you know, there's a whole list of terribles. But, you know, when there's so many human lives lost, it's just fucking awful. And I feel completely powerless in the face of most of it. I reached out to a couple of friends of mine who have family there to make sure they're okay and their family's okay. But outside of that, I don't know what to tell you. All I know is that if I take in the information and just go about my day, I feel like I should be doing more. I do not know how much more I can be doing in the face of almost anything other than talking about it, whether it be war or fascism or climate change. I tried to talk about it. It's difficult. But that said, I had a pretty good day yesterday. I just made some choices about my day. And I'm not a guy that doesn't work well. I really work a lot. I always need to be doing something. Alongside of feeling that anything I do just to have a life is in some form denial, I think that anything I do that isn't somehow working or doing something proactive to fix or cook or write or think, anything that's not leading to something else, I think, what are you doing? So I have a total inability to relax and just enjoy my fucking life, really. Even if it's a hike. If it's a hike, it means you're getting the exercise in, getting the dopamine up, getting your heart rate up. It's an effort to frame stuff just as, hey, it's okay, dude, to sit and watch a movie. You don't have to think of it as research. It's okay. I talked to Tom Papa today. He was on the show back in 2018, episode 919. Good guy. Always like seeing Tom. You know, we work together at the Comedy Store a lot. He has a new book out called We're All In This Together, So Make Some Room. So I wanted to have him back on. And not just a book. I enjoy talking to this guy. Funny guy, sweet guy. How's your hope holding up? Do you have hope? That's the other thing I start thinking about. It's like, what's the difference between hope and denial? It's just a tonal difference. It's atonal. And if you do them both together, it's atonal. And that brings us to jazz. Because what I chose to do the other day after I worked out compulsively like a madman to the point where I was sore, I spent several hours engaging with jazz music on a few different levels. But before I talk about that, let me tell you where I'm going to be. I'm going to be in Bellingham, Washington at the Mount Baker Theater for one show on Saturday, October 14th, as part of the Bellingham Exit Festival. I'm in Portland, Oregon. A late show was added to my dates at Helium on Sunday, October 22nd. I forgot to mention I have a date at Largo that just got put up on the website. That's October 16th here in Los Angeles, California. I will be at, the Boston, the old Boston Garden. I'm at the TD Garden for Comics Come Home on Saturday, November 4th. Then I'm at the Chemo Theater in Albuquerque, New Mexico for one show on November 11th. I believe that might be sold out. Denver, Colorado, I'll be at the Comedy Works South for four shows, November 17th and 18th. There's more LA dates coming. I'm at Dynasty Typewriter, December 1st, 13th, 28th. I'm at the Elysian Theater on December 6th, 15th, and 22nd. Also, this is the last week for you to be eligible to win one of my signed tour posters. I'm giving away signed tour posters that are no longer available for purchase. To be able to win, you have to be signed up for WTF Plus by October 15th. So go to the link in the episode description or click on WTF Plus over at WTFpod.com. There are 30 posters to give away, and winners will be picked in a random drawing. So sign up by October 15th to be in the drawing. All right? Is it jazz? Am I jazz? Yeah, that's something I always think about. But I'll tell you what unfolded in the last couple of days. So I was sitting at home, and I'm like, is there a way to enjoy my day? Is there a way to do that that doesn't involve eating or masturbating? Is there a way I can just enjoy my day without adding just a small vibration of shame to it? So my buddy Dan, Gimme Dan over at Gimme Gimme Records, gave me this Pharoah Sanders box set for my birthday. It's a specific box set. It's the Pharoah album from 1977. It was a small release. It's not a skronk album. It's not like boom, bam, bam, boom, bam, boom, bam, 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 boom, 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 bam. Not that. But I'd never heard it before, and I don't really have any way of contextualizing many of the jazz people that I listen to. You know, I know the difference between skronk, as my friend Dan calls it, and bebop and big band and hard bop. And, you know, I can get the variations, but I always associated Pharoah Sanders with a certain amount of free form. But this one isn't, and it's beautiful. And I put it on, and I read the story about it, and I listened to both sides all the way through. And then I listened to a couple of live versions from the same era. There's a second vinyl in there of Harvest Time Live. And it was beautiful. It was meditational, you know, and I don't always know how to even talk about jazz, to be honest with you. But so then I just said, well, let's make it a jazz day. And then I watched the first two parts of the Wayne Shorter doc, and a lot of things were brought together for me. And I just don't know the history, and I should know it. It seems like information that's available. I didn't know about Wayne Shorter and about his childhood and about, you know, him moving through his childhood into Art Blakey's Jazz Messengers, and then on into Miles's Quintet, which redefined Miles altogether, and then on into Weather Report and all the tragedy he encountered in his life and his compositional genius, all of that stuff, his Buddhism. You know, after all was said and done, I don't know, if I can tell in certain situations, that I'm not sure I can tell the difference between someone on the spectrum in a certain way and a devout Buddhist in terms of their presence. He was clearly a genius, but how he weathered the tragedy he did without completely collapsing, he sort of attributes to Buddhism in the big picture and looking for the indestructible happiness or whatnot. But the nuances of the way he plays and how he's respected, and it just gave me this whole other understanding of his music. And then, you know, it enabled me to go back into that Pharoah Sanders record and kind of figure out, you know, no matter how many jazz docs I see, I don't think I'd ever heard the Thelonious Monk quote that jazz, when he was asked what it is, he says it's music that white people can't steal. Because of the time it was coming about, that bebop and hard bop and the way pop music worked and just how much appropriation there was or outright theft. And that gave me another nuance, and Shorter tells a lot of Miles Davis stories. But I spent 4 hours engaging with jazz music. I listened to one album once, got some new information, listened to it again in a different way, changed my brain a little bit. And it was great. It was a day well spent. But there was part of me that was sort of like, was it though? Was it well spent? I mean, you could have been doing other things. I watched Pope of Greenwich Village the other day. I don't know why. I hadn't seen it in a long time. And I wanted to try to figure out again, however many years later, whether or not Eric Roberts was good or just completely over the top and overacting. And I'm going to err on the side of Eric Roberts was being Eric Roberts. Charlie, they took my thumb, Charlie. But I enjoyed the movie. I enjoy a little Burt Young occasionally. I'm a Burt Young guy. He's great in it. I don't know what this need to watch old movies is. I think that, you know, in the face of oncoming disaster, chaos, catastrophe, apocalypse, sometimes it's just nice to ground yourself in something that is familiar, but you don't quite remember. And when you watch it again, what it meant to you the first time works as a foundation, and then how you take it in now, it almost gets your entire being up to speed. You're like, this made an impact on me years ago. I don't quite remember why or how. And then you watch it or listen to it or read it again, and it makes the jump or it doesn't. Either it arcs over all those years that you had sort of left it behind and reconnect some part of you to something younger. I don't know if I still don't call that nostalgia. I call that a sort of figuring out whether the piece of art has grown with you and whether or not it still has something to say to you, something to inform. So look, Tom Papa is here. So let's get on with it. His book, new book, We're All In This Together, So Make Some Room, is available wherever you get books. And he's out on tour now. Go to tompapa.com for cities and tour dates. The guy's a tight act, man. The guy is a craftsman. He's funny, and he knows what he's doing. And I'm going to talk to him right now. Well, do you exercise? Do you work out?
Yeah.
But like, what?
Mostly cardio.
Right.
But I just hang from
the... You'll hang from the bar?
This company put a pull-up bar in my, and some other stuff in my garage.
So you have a full gym?
Eh, makeshifts.
What company? Because you're such a powerful influencer? They're like, maybe we can get this guy hanging from the bar.
Right, exactly. This guy has a minimum following and even less muscle mass.
It'd be great just to see him struggle to get one in. That's what regular people want to see. That guy can't do it. I can't either. Let me get one of those bars.
Exactly. And I really have been... I was like, I'm going to, by the end of the summer, I'm going to be able to do at least one pull-up.
And no?
No.
They're hard, man.
They're hard.
I mean, like you do an overhand or underhand? I guess a chin-up is
this
underhand.
That's the pull-up. That's the hard one. This one, I could do a couple, like in a gym on the road.
Oh, yeah?
I could do a couple.
In the gym on the road?
Yeah.
You have more energy in the gym on the road because there's less at stake.
Yeah.
It's like the existential loneliness of being in a hotel gym fuels you like a superhero. Wow, I'm the only man alive.
On display for the lobby of the Days Inn. I've been trying to run more on the road, and this has been a real conundrum. Mm. I don't like... it's hard to pack like a pair of running shoes on the road.
You got to really commit. You got to decide. You know, it's like...
It's so hard.
How do you handle it? I'm like, I'll wear the sneakers on the plane.
Which kills me.
What's wrong with us?
Because...
What do we got to dress up on the plane for? I'm like, I wear my boots. I got to take them off. There's fucking metal in them. But I'm not... I will not wear sneakers.
Yeah, but you look good. You look better. And because... You know why? Because the sneakers is an indication of that army of lazy people that are just wearing, especially middle-aged men, wearing those shoes that they're not working out. It's kind of like...
Those ones that like you almost got for free. What are those?
Yeah.
What was that brand?
There is no brand. No,
they're just soft.
Skechers.
There was like a thing. There was this whole movement around these shoes that have nothing to them. They're like slippers. What the fuck were they called? I feel like
I don't
we did ads for them.
I don't want to because... I don't want to join them.
So, I don't either. I
so wearing my sneakers on the plane just kills me. But there's no room in the carry-on to put them.
It's all about getting that thing in that goddamn carry-on.
I know. I just bought a new one yesterday.
You did?
And my wife's like, "Is it smaller?"
Yeah.
And I was like, "It's the same brand, the same." I'm like, "No, it's the same." And I put it next to the old bag. It's like a half inch on each side. Small. They just keep pinning you in and making them smaller.
Well, I mean. For 3 days, I mean, you know, you can get by. Like,
yes.
If, you know, then it's like easy peasy, right?
A week.
Yeah.
That's when you're in trouble.
Yeah, with the one bag, you can do it, but you might be, you know, you ever put the, put the sneakers in your shoulder bag?
Yeah.
That's sad.
Yeah,
you're God forbid you put them on and not, you know, and not be one of those and be one of those guys as opposed to the guy that's got sneakers jammed into his computer bag yeah. on the plane. Yeah,
exactly. You know what's so funny too is that when I did wear the sneakers in the airport, and I'm usually boots and I'm wearing the sneakers and I'm connecting like in Phoenix, like a mile walk, and I'm like, this is pretty comfortable.
I know.
This is why all those people are wearing these.
Yeah, it's like at the Salt Lake City airport where it takes an hour to walk from your gate.
And wear boots like a
clunking
around. At least I look cool.
I don't know if I've met people. I don't know if I've ever talked about it specifically about this. But yeah, I mean, I will. And you see people online when you're at security, you've got it figured out where you're taking off your dumb boots. Mine have metal in them. So even if I'm TSA or first, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I got to take them off because there's metal in them. They're like, you don't have to take them. And you look at their comfortable shoes and they think they've got one up on you. That like they're educating you. And you can't just say, like, yeah, but you look like a putz. The fuck you know what I mean? Look,
you gave up.
I'm still like, you know, I'm going to get off the plane and I'm ready to go do things. What are you ready to do? Yeah. Go to the hotel and, you know, put on your real clothes? You
order Pizza Hut like the other guy in the room across from you? Yeah. Oh, it's the worst.
What, are you out all the time?
I am. I'm going hard.
Yeah?
I'm going really hard from now until...
When did you start?
I don't know. Like, it's never ending. I slow down a little bit in the summer. But it's like every weekend now.
Well, what do you do? Like, so you'll do like any fucking place?
Pretty much. No, like for the first time in my career, I have like, I can go play nice theaters and I just.
This is the first theater tour? Really?
For the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And.
What are we talking, like 1,100?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like the average.
Yeah.
I have a huge one in New Jersey that's 2,000.
Which one?
NJPAC.
Oh, I don't know if I've been there. Newark. No,
yeah. It's a great spot.
I think I did that once. But
they have the Victoria Theater, which is the smaller one.
We're your Jersey guy, right?
600, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to, that'll be my biggest. But yeah, mostly around 1,000. So I'm just, and my daughters are both gone now. I just dropped my other daughter off at the, pretty much.
I'm sorry.
Pretty much. At school. So we're empty. And I thought my wife was going to be done teaching. So she was going to come with me. So I just packed the... I'm like, well, there's no reason to be home. Let's go.
Yeah.
And now my wife's teaching, so she'll be home alone in the empty house.
Oh, is she sad about that?
Yeah, she's sad about it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
But not that you're gone, that the kids are gone, probably.
That the kids are gone. Yeah. Me, it's more of the same.
But wait, so, so you, like, do you sell out the New Jersey pack?
I don't know if I'll sell it out. We're close.
Yeah?
But it's not till October, end of October.
Yeah, and like, where else
I've been
going?
Doing well. This weekend, I'm going to like Tacoma and Salem, Oregon. And then I'm going
Salem.
To I'm doing a San Francisco and Salt Lake City.
Where are you going, Salt Lake?
The King's Theater.
Uh-huh.
And
like, I just did the club there. The weird thing is,
Wise
like,
Guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Great.
Because like, if I'm working out an hour, I'll go do the clubs.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
and even in markets, like, I'm going to St. Louis next week. And I think... Like, I kind of have a good sense of what I can pull. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, like, I'll go do St. Louis because I'm not going to do a theater in St. Louis. And, like, I'm.
St. Louis is a tough market.
It is. So I've got 5 shows there, and, you know, totally, you know, a couple of the late shows aren't looking great, but it's a total of like 700 tickets. And I'm like, that's about what I would do.
Yeah.
You know, at a theater, 700, 800 maybe.
But
in St.
there's
Louis.
The beauty of, like, if you are working out something new, a big thing, a big hour, I hate saying the hour, but your new act.
Yeah.
5 sets is better than 1 set.
Well, that's why
set.
I do it.
Yeah, it's better than 1 set.
You know, but you do, like, you do remember. you know, after a second show on a Saturday, you're like, oh, Christ.
Yeah, this is hard. That's what I wanted to say when I came up on the porch, by the way.
What?
Your special was so good.
Oh, thanks, man.
It was so funny.
Thank God.
Really, I mean, really, really. I watch a lot of them for my radio show.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love you and love your comedy and all that, but this special just was like laughing, like alone in my house, just like laughing out loud, which is hard. Even comedians you love,
I know.
Just like, yeah, that's good.
Yeah,
like a little chuckle.
Sure.
This was just like,
ha-ha! Oh, good. That's good. I'm glad.
It's you know, so good.
That's very nice of you to say.
It really was.
Well, you know, I do think that, you know, as an old man now, you know, I've relaxed a lot of the muscles that made people sort of go like, yeah, it was intense, man. You know, it was a good special, but it was intense. You got pretty heavy, you know.
I think I've
been able to get funnier.
Yeah, but without eliminating the subjects.
No.
The subject, you're still dealing with the same stuff.
Sure.
But it's funnier.
Oh, thank you.
You're always funny, but this was like, I don't know.
I worked hard.
You're craft at it. You're better at it. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's before you would kind of be like, okay, but now you're like, give me the same stuff, but it's got these laughs to it.
And I think I'm a little lighter in certain ways. And I, you know, it was interesting with that was, you know, we did two shows.
Mm-hmm.
And the first, it was a town hall. And the first show, they were just too excited.
Yeah.
You know, they were, you know, everything was like, it was too much. And,
yeah.
And you know, when you're doing two for the special, you kind of get your footing on that first one. But literally the audience was too good.
I know.
The second audience was hard. It was a real audience. Like I had to work for it.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
we're
going to use that one, right?
Yeah.
Because I had to go get them, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And as much as people say, like, I sit down, I do this, or like, you know, I know, like I was up and moving.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, and going after it.
It's interesting though. When I rewatched it, and just so it'd be fresh. And there was, when you go to the stool pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You kind of come out and you pace back and forth and you sat down and that shot was so great.
Right.
And you sitting, I was just, I wanted you to sit for some reason.
For a second.
Yeah. Like I just, there was something like, you look, you're good in that space. Not a lot of people do that.
No. Yeah. I'm a good sitter. But that was weird because that was one of the jokes I mangled. There's a couple of jokes that I blew, and all I only know that you know they're fine enough, but there was a beat I missed and one other thing. But because when you really work a fucking hour, you know, you like it is sort of once you get down to it, you're like you know it, and and the trick is to be engaged with it, to not walk through it. But
no,
but like there was a couple of moments in there that I riffed, like I leave a little room for that. So what?
Yeah,
are you working on one?
Really good.
Well, thanks, buddy.
Yeah, yeah. I think I'm going to shoot in the spring, like end of the winter, spring.
When was your last
somewhere
one?
In there. Last October.
Uh-huh. What was it called?
What a Day.
Okay.
What a Day.
I don't know if I watched that one. I've been watching your sets lately, though.
Yeah.
I can't remember, but you've been funny lately.
Thank you.
You're always funny. We've talked about it before. There's your pacing is.
You always say whenever I hear you talking about me to somebody else, you always go precise. He's very precise.
Jack Benny. he does the Benny takes.
I'm always thinking to myself, my jokes are a little tight, but I feel like you want me to be fuzzier.
No. Like you know, I'm learning from
Jaggier.
No. Because, like, I'm learning from you, you know, like, because in the last special, I'm very deliberate.
Yeah.
I'm not frenetic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not, you know, there's not, like, that's what sort of left. Even my friend Jonathan said recently to me, he watched me, he's like, yeah, you seem a lot more paced and deliberate. Mm-hmm. Like, but he didn't say it in a positive way. And I'm like, anyway, you want manic crazy, Mark? Like, that's when I'm working shit out.
Yeah. No, you're right. Like, now that you say it. It's like an economy of words in this one that made it more impactful.
And that's something I learned from you, or I learned from Jeselnik, or I just learned from, you know, even Nate, you know, who used to open for me, that when I'm myself, which I'll do sometimes, I'm always myself, but sometimes if the audience isn't great, you know, I'll pull the stool up to the lip of the stage. I'm like, what do you want?
Right.
You want real? You want the real thing? All right. Well, and people like it.
Yeah.
But it's hard to manufacture that, and it's hard to enjoy. Mm-hmm. You know, a pacing yourself is a great craft.
Yeah,
that like I when I look back at the specials, I just think I have become more deliberate because I'm doing much more stand-up than I think I have since I was a kid.
Oh, interesting.
Because what am I going to do?
Yeah.
You know, I'm here, you know, I go out like 3-4 nights a week to the store, and then you get a chunk, and it's new, and it's frenetic, and then you just start kind of honing it and figuring out the beats and then, you know, leaving the space that you need. But I think it's just this evolution for me of, like, I'm still enjoying evolving whatever my craft is.
Yeah.
Like, no. I'm not set in any way.
Yeah. And you should take pride in that you're achieving it. Like, like I said, like, the subjects, I think, like, in the first, like, I think in the first 15 minutes,
oh, yeah.
You've talked about
all of it.
All of it.
The end of the world.
The end of the world.
Fascism.
The pandemic.
Yeah,
fascism.
I got that all out of the way. I felt it was my social responsibility. I was very aware of that. Like, I'm going to throw all this shit up front. It's going to be a lot, but then we're going right into grief.
Yeah.
You know, like a little bit of a transition.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good.
It was really good. And the stuff about your mother's boyfriend, just like him not having a point to his stories. Like,
that's like a Tom Papa bit.
I did kind of love it. It was like closer to like family stuff that I've seen you do.
It was a different time.
it was a different time.
Yeah.
That's it?
Yeah.
You couldn't add to it? You had no arc, no nothing? It was a different time.
Yeah. That poor guy. Everyone takes a hit. Are your folks still around?
They are. Yeah. They're like 76.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really? What, how old are you?
42.
Wow, that's not true.
No. I'm 54.
I'm going to be 60 this month.
Wow.
And both of my parents are still alive.
No.
80, 84.
Good genes.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, my dad's losing his mind.
Yeah.
So, like, sure, the physical existence part, that's a guy, got those good genes.
He sounds nicer now, though.
He is nicer.
He sounds, like, more cuddly.
Yeah, it's like pushing buttons on a memory machine, where you're like, Dad, do you remember when we lived in New Jersey? He's like, yeah. What do you remember? Like, then you hit little buttons and you can watch it kind of light up.
Yeah.
But then it sort of drifts into sort of like, nah, I don't know.
Yeah. Looking at the water. I love that one too. Looking at the water. Oh, the water guy.
There's a lot of stuff in there. It's so weird how quickly it goes away.
I know. Isn't that terrifying? Talk about Alzheimer's.
No, it's like on purpose.
I know. You're discarding it.
But it's so stupid, I think.
I don't know if we can handle it. I don't know if we can keep it all in.
But I mean, like, I mean, I've talked about this with other people. I mean, there are jokes that I did that I know, like, I'm still a discoverable person. You and I are both, it's not like we're selling out arenas.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, there are people that have not seen the stuff we did 4 years ago.
Which was really good.
Right.
I know.
And you kind of, there's part of me that's like, why not just do a greatest hits? And then you realize some guys used to do that, you know,
I think about it when I do corporate gigs.
Oh, why not? Yeah. What are they expecting?
They're expecting a clean, funny show.
Yeah, that's it.
They're, you know, half of them don't half of them aren't even comedy fans,
and they're not even paying attention.
Yeah, they're just being brought in there because it's their night, you know. And if I'm working on something like new, like the new act that I'm in, it's not going to be as tight or.
Yeah.
It's usually a little.
You're on a workshop at the corporate.
Yeah, and it's a little less palatable. There's like, you know, I haven't. So I'll go back to the last two acts.
Oh yeah.
But it's, I got to look it up.
Oh, right. Yeah. Some guy keeps bothering me at the Comedy Store. These two old guys that go there like every fucking night.
Yeah.
I guess it's good. I guess that's how they're deciding to
spend their time.
Yeah, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
This guy keeps telling me, it's like, you know, do the gun thing, the bat thing. Why don't you do that? And that guy's seen it like 100 times. And I'm like, I don't even remember how it starts.
I know.
Do you remember the opening? You know, just, can you put the needle in the groove for me? Because I don't know what the fuck.
I know. I literally have to look it up or listen to it off Spotify.
But I don't think that's Alzheimer's. I just think it's, you know, we have trained ourselves for whatever reason to think that, like, once it's out there, it's done.
Which is so stupid.
I guess. I mean, like there was stuff left over from my last taping, and I'm kind of pulling it out a little bit now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, why not? But there's other stuff happening. I guess it's.
But when you hate when I do go to like a corporate thing, and I'll take out a joke that Mark, it's 20 years old, like a 20-year old joke.
Yeah,
and it kills in a way that nothing currently kills. And there's something to that. Like, wait, those jokes more, mature. They age.
But is it more simple? Is it like it's stylistically?
More simple. It's more palatable. But there's also something to those jokes, like that they do get better in 4 years. It's a better joke than in some of them. Some of them die on the vine, but
yeah,
the ones that are good and they do get mature.
I wonder if that's true.
It is true.
Really?
Yes. Yes. Before we started cranking out specials and stuff,
yeah,
stuff would, you know, sit in your act a lot longer.
Sure. I mean, you know, Robert Klein couldn't stop his foot for 40 years.
Yeah.
Like, I remember, it's like this weird thing where they, like, there was some special of his, you know, an HBO special, and they literally showed, like, you know, a montage of all his HBO specials of him doing that bit.
Oh, no, really?
And I'm like, are we going to see it again now?
There is a point where I remember seeing Cosby at Carnegie Hall, and people were asking for him to do the dentist bit.
Yeah.
And yeah, it had spoiled.
It had?
Yeah. People really wanted to see it, and he went into it, but.
Didn't care.
Huh?
He didn't care.
That it wasn't great?
Well, are you,
I don't know.
Maybe he didn't, because like that, I mean, that's the trick of it, because I find that even when I'm working on stuff now, that like once I get something up and going,
yeah,
you know, I know I got to remember it, but you know, after you, if you've got an hour and you're doing short sets,
yeah,
you can just, you know, get tired of the new bits,
mm-hmm,
because you've got them in a place,
right?
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, what am I using these short sets for? I know I can get laughs.
I know.
So like, what are we going to do here?
The short sets are so valuable though. Like I have this,
like going to the
gym. I have this 15-20 minute wobbly part right now in my act.
Which one? I probably saw it.
It's about therapy. It's about people going to therapy, trying to figure out, like, there's no end to going to therapy, that you're going to go forever.
Oh.
And we don't break and then get to be fixed. And
right.
It's this whole chunk. And it's kind of like all over the place. I wasn't really sure what I was saying.
Yeah.
And, but man, go to the Cellar for 3 nights, come back, go to the Store for 2 nights, and just do that.
Yeah.
Just do that part that really isn't the beginning of a set. It's really kind of a clunky.
Just work it.
And it gets so much better. And then you plug it back into the thing.
I haven't been to the Cellar in so long. I don't know why I turned on it.
Oh, you did?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I keep
Where
talking
do you go?
About
it. What are you doing in New York?
I barely work out when I go to New York. Like, you know, the last time I went to New York, I hadn't done stand-up at a club in New York in years, really. Because I just like to go to New York if I have something to do.
We talked about this in the lounge.
Yeah.
I saw you in the lounge that morning.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
Oh, because I ran into you when I was just going for no reason?
Yeah, you were going for fun.
That's right, at the American Lounge.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a revelation to me.
Yeah.
Because
I didn't know we could do that.
Yeah. I mean, what am I doing? Do you know what I mean? Like,
did you not do sets?
I ended up going to the Stand,
uh-huh,
which I had never done, that Stand. The last time I went to the Stand, it was off of 3rd Avenue somewhere, right? The original one where...
I've never been.
Oh, it was okay. It was a little echoey. It was fine.
Yeah.
But I have some... I've got it in my head that the Cellar has become sort of a mill for...
too many shows?
Well, there's too many shows, and there's this, you know, and I don't know, you know. Yeah, I just think it was better just knowing that, you know, no one was next door. That the band was next door.
Oh, that he wasn't in charge of the place?
Well, just say, like, why is the band, I can't hear myself talking because they're playing a Beatles song.
Oh, upstairs.
Yeah.
Well, that's only on Mondays.
Okay.
It's still great. You still walk in, you know, those rooms, they don't change. They just, it's big.
They're not
in.
Easy rooms.
No, not at all.
Like, yeah,
that's
talking.
What's great about it. The original room at the Comedy Store or...
The original room at the Comedy Store is, like, I have no fear of it.
No fear, but it's not easy.
No, but it's easy for me now.
Mm.
And, like, I think that some part of it has to do with, and I used to talk about the store like this, too. Yeah, like when I go back to New York and I go into the Cellar, there's some part of me that's like, this is where the abuse happened.
Right. It's in your head. Yeah, for sure.
And, you know.
Who's the abuser, though? The audience?
Who's the abuser? It's just the whole place. He's not the audience. You're on stage and you got to watch Manny would run in and just like, are they laughing? And he's like pacing around back and forth. I'm like, oh, fuck. You see like Estee's head in the hallway. Like, now here we go. And then Tell would walk in and I'm like, get out. I don't need that. I'm just trying to get through this without sweating. Jesus, fuck.
It's so funny. But that's what I love. That's why both those rooms, they're comfortably uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, theoretically, they should be great. Theoretically, the original cellar room should be easy. Structurally, it really should.
Yeah.
But there's something back in the day before it became like
popular,
this mass, you know,
yeah.
It was really a strange and eclectic audience, like more. Uh-huh. More than anywhere else.
Right.
You know, there'd be like, you know, a table of Hasidic Jews. Then there'd be a table of, you know, German tourists. It was like, and then there'd be some kids. And you didn't know who the fuck was.
Yeah.
It was always kind of weird.
They didn't know why they were there. You didn't know why
kinda,
they were there. Right.
You know, and just the.
It's popular. Now it's.
People go to expecting to see people drop in. It's like the store, you know.
Yeah.
But there's just something, like, I was talking to Soder about it, who I'd never really talked to or met. I recently had him on.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I was in New York, and I just went by the cellar, and I did a set in the regular room, and then they're like, you want to go do the underground? I'm like, I've never done the underground. You walk in, it looks like a larger cellar.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, but Soder went on and killed, and I went on, and it was just that old feeling of the cellar came back. Like, I start my opening joke, and it's like, meh. And then I'm like, oh, I remember this. I remember every part of this. That sort of like the vigilance and the sort of like, you know, guardedness you have to have in New York. You can't fuck around. It's vulnerability is not necessarily welcome, you know. And then like I told Soder this. I'm like, you know, when you bomb as a grown comic,
yeah,
you know, either you acknowledge it or you just sort of, you know, feel that weird sweat on your neck,
yeah.
Where, you know, like you're like, I know they don't see it, but I know what that means.
How'd you play it?
I just wrote it out.
Yeah.
Like there's no, like for some reason that room, it's just, you're not going to turn them really.
One of my last bombs was upstairs in the in-between room. That little lounge room.
I don't even know what that is.
If you go, before you go down the stairs for the underground.
Oh, into the underground?
Yeah, off to the side, there's a little room in there where Colin works out his stuff like every week.
Yeah.
And he asked me to open for him because his cousin wasn't around.
Yeah.
And I went in there and just bombed.
Yeah.
Bombed.
Did you get the sweat thing?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It was like that vulnerable, like, oh.
Yeah, you're right. But you do that all inside now, where it's just sort of like, oh, my God. it's like some sort of weird wake-up call. Where
yeah,
you just,
it's so funny.
And then, but for me, when that happens, it's like I'm just starting out.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
I mean, I know, like, you know, my body will carry me through it. And, it happens in the main room at the store sometimes where you're like, all right, well, this is the level that we're working with.
We're not getting out of this.
Yeah, and it's all right.
Yeah.
You know,
and I don't feel like pushing and trying to
What am I going to do?
Defeat it.
Yeah, I'd rather just tell them, and it's like, well, you're not great.
Yeah. I just need to say these words.
Yeah, well, I mean, I will definitely take them to task.
Yeah.
Usually.
Yeah.
But also, like, I'm not one of these people, like, you know, it takes a long time to realize that, like, you know, whatever anybody thinks, whoever goes before you can fuck it up for you for at least half your set.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, like, no problem. Yeah, we'll just go 15 each. No problem.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you're like, oh, Christ.
Tonight.
Yeah, I'm going to take a hit for 5 minutes to try to figure. But
I thought we were all working on new stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Why'd you just open with your closer?
Well, that's why I don't like the main room as much in the store, because it looks like a real performance space.
It's like a Vegas showroom or something.
So comedians get there and they feel like they've got to throw fastballs.
Sure.
It's almost like the room is dictating, no, you should be putting on a show.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, I just want to work on this stuff. Yeah. So I've started asking, just put me in the OR.
I go for both. Sometimes you can get loose in the main room, especially if it's not totally packed. Or like, and also like, you know, I start to realize like, and it's like, I'm not, it's okay if not everyone's laughing.
100%.
You know, it's like, what do you.
That's the thing. There's not that switch like, oh shit, I'm in trouble. I've got to really try to kill. It's not about
Yeah, you just right got to stay in the saddle and like, and not ruin it for the people that like you.
And what's that? Well, yeah, I mean, that's the great part about it too, is you come off of a mediocre thing in the main room because you stuck to your guns,
yeah,
and you're trying your stuff out, and it gets to whatever, and whoever was just doing their special right before you, and then you come off, and all the kids that are parking cars and working the door,
great
like,
set.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. Well, you who were, that's who I was playing for.
Yeah, right.
The comics that see the same shit every fucking night.
Exactly.
But what you're talking about before about old jokes is interesting because there's these old guys, you know, when you watch Argus Hamilton or Tom Dreesen, they kill. And I'm really starting to realize that there is a language of comedy that predates us that I think a lot of the audience kind of grew up with. There's a rhythm to it.
Oh, yeah.
And like, you know, even if the jokes are not great, you know, they're good enough. But like Dreesen will get up there and like he's got a very kind of singular cadence. It's old school. But it just kills because that's the language of television comedy from, you know, the 70s, 70s, 80s. You know, it's just
sometimes those guys are doing it in front of a room full of 18-year-olds.
I know.
And it's killing.
I know. It's so it makes me happy.
But they didn't grow up with it. You know what I mean?
No, I know. I think that's true. Yeah,
I think there's something to the pacing of that thing.
And also just to the professionalism. I mean, what the fuck are these 18-year-olds watching?
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's talk like old men. I mean, I don't understand. I can't even get involved with TikTok comedy enough to hate it. Like, I
you
can't
were so
do
funny.
It.
We were at the back of the Comedy Store. I finished my set and I come walking up. Yeah. I'm trying to get out of there and you're sitting in the back row.
Yeah.
So I sat down next to you for a second and you just turn to me and you go, TikTok. We got to do that now?
I don't know. Like, you know.
I was like, yeah, I think so. I know, but there is a, well, two things. I think the Dreesen and the thing and Argus. There's a pacing, and here comes that works. It just there's something baked into that. People perfected that, and it can't be terrible jokes, but it still works.
I think that's the thing. It's like you and I do a different style, and like when I see guys that go kaboom 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 joke to joke,
yeah,
there's always part of me that's sort of like why don't I do that? And it's like because I'm not going to sit down and write those jokes,
right? There is always that thing of you see somebody and you're just like, why don't I do that? Well, because I'm not that.
Yeah, I'm not like you have to write all those jokes. Some of those, the like jokes like that, for me, when they happen, I'm like, oh, that's one of those jokes.
Yeah.
I don't know how that happened. Yeah. I didn't write it down, but it's one of them, you know? Yeah. So I have a few of those, but it's not, I don't do an hour of that. Right. It drives me crazy. I don't even know.
But then the other thing to the TikTok thing, it's funny watching my kids. They're 21 and 18. And TikTok and social media has been around enough for that to have trended and trended out.
Yeah.
Like my kids will mock comedy, not stand up, but comedy clips and stuff on TikTok as they'll be like, you know, oh, that's 2010.
Yeah.
That's like they're. The sense of the comedy language within that is the same thing, but for their generation, like they've seen it, they know it's hack now,
right?
And they're like, oh, that's a hacky attempt at a joke,
huh?
Yeah,
that's not your influence.
No, this is them. I don't even know that they're up to, you know, they're just on it, watching it, digesting it, and then things popular kids on TikTok are now hacky. They're now like they've trended out.
Yeah.
It's a new language.
It's competitive.
Yeah.
With the YouTube too. Like I don't, and a lot of times I don't know who they are. I don't know who that guy Matt, what's his name is. What's his name?
I don't even know who you're talking
about. Big, he's the big guy. Matt Reif.
Oh, Matt Reif. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I watched 5 minutes of him doing sort of rapid fire crowd work.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, all right, I get it.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't, but it's like, it just comes back to this thing that used to annoy me, but there's nothing that can be done about it, is that when you and I got into it, there wasn't even bringer shows except at Stand Up New York, and we thought it was weird. You know, it's like you go, you do the open mics, you figure it out, you get the 10-minute spot. You know, it was totally comedy club dependent, and we had a goal in mind, which was to be a great comic.
Yeah.
And now it just seems like, and this has been going on for a long time since alt comedy and since comic produced shows where it's like, what, can any fuck just do this?
Yeah.
You know, like without charisma or talent necessarily. And like, look, I've seen guys, you know, come up in our generation that were, you know, definitely not funny.
Yeah.
And then, you know, figured out just by locking into who they were, and it worked out. But it just seems like there's such a premium put on, you know, these small clips. And I don't, and crowd work.
Yeah.
I mean, I can do crowd work, but it's like,
I know.
Oh my God. Like, why spend a half hour doing it? I
know. Just so you can get your things to put, then post up. But, you know, they did it. And
I guess about selling tickets.
And
I
they
guess,
go sell big places because it caught. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm,
there's always that. There's always that mystifying.
I'm not in the same business.
Right. Yeah.
I'm just not. And nothing I can do about it.
Oh, yeah. I was on a plane once next to Jeff Tweedy.
Oh, yeah.
And it was after the it was the morning after the Grammys.
Yeah.
And it was the same. And I never met him before. And we're just chatting. And he was there, I think, because of Mavis Staples or something.
Yeah.
And we were talking, it was like Katy Perry was big that year and a couple other people. And you could tell he was just early morning, just kind of working through it in his head. And he said exactly what you just said.
Yeah.
I don't think we're in the same business. And he really meant it. He's like, I've got a guitar. I've got songs. I'm doing my thing. But it is not what they're doing.
No, that's absolutely true.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, we always get our feathers ruffled when it comes into our orbit. But there's always been those acts that have, you know, flourished. And it's like, oh, but that's on my stage. That's kind of what I do. But it's not what you do.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like, you know, I sometimes wonder why. Like, I've got a good audience, you know, and it's fine. But there is some part of me that thinks, like, I should have a few more people. Yeah, I'm not even looking. I'm not looking to play an arena.
Yeah,
I don't even like playing rooms that are over 2,000.
Uh huh.
Because you lose something. It becomes this other thing.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, the nature of my soul or my that I'm exposing can't make it all the way back.
No.
To a 2,000 seat.
No.
You know, because it's a different type of show.
Yeah, 100%.
But
that is really the sweet spot. And how insane, by the way.
What?
That
we're complaining about that.
Yeah. I mean, what a great
career
to go around the country packing out places, 1,000, 2,000 seats of people that want to see you.
Yeah.
Who have
and
been,
then being like, but you know, these guys are doing six.
And that guy's doing an arena.
Yeah. But there's just no way. Because, like, honestly, Tom, like, I am not really like other people.
Really?
And that, you know, and I'm speaking about my life, and it's sometimes it's fairly specific.
Yeah.
And it's not like there's not going to be an arena full of guys going, that's right, that's my guy. Yeah. Sure.
Getting part of the beer sales.
Yeah. It's just not, I don't know.
Can I tell you a Lynn Shelton story?
Yeah.
I don't think I told you this. This is like two or three specials ago, and I was trying to figure out what to do.
Yeah, I remember.
Did I tell you this?
No, but I remember her talking about it. She almost directed your special or something?
Steven Soderbergh was thinking about doing it, and he was like, I can't do it. You know who I really love is Lynn Shelton.
Yeah.
And I was going to perform in the Pacific Northwest where she was.
Yeah.
And so he kind of said, he connected us together.
Yeah.
And she came out to a club to see me.
Yeah.
With the hopes of maybe she'll direct my thing. And I was in this horrible club.
Yeah.
A horrible club. I don't even know which spot it was.
It wasn't Laughs. Was it out in Laughlin or somewhere? Was it Dave?
It was like Portlandish, Seattle-ish.
Okay.
One of those.
Yeah.
And it was a horrible place, like connected to this mall. I remember having to go through this tube to get there, and it was just horrible. And I was so sick. I had this horrible, I had no voice. You know when the post-strip and you can't talk anymore?
Yeah.
And I'm out of my mind, and the setup, they're playing this horrible music to begin with, and I mean, it's everything that was the opposite of Lynn Shelton's
sensibility.
Like a real artist. Like, yeah. This is like when Rob Zombie came to see me in the beginning of my career, and he came to the Ice House and was like, "How many fucking birthdays do you have to go through?" He was like, "What are you doing with your career? Like, get out of here!" Yeah. You know, it was like that kind of thing. So anyway, I went up and I struggled through a set, and I was all nasally, and shitty, and the environment was terrible. And I walked Lynn to her car, parking garage, because I was literally concerned I wouldn't let any woman in my orbit, like, just walk through this parking garage. Like, it was just kind of sketch.
Yeah.
And I walked her out. I'm like, "Thank you, Lynn. We'll talk later." And she was like, I delightfully passed on directing my special. And I felt so bad because it was like, she was such a cool kid, and I brought her to, like, a horrible environment, and I was not good that night, and it was just, like, it was terrible. But it was a near miss. And then when I saw her with you at the Comedy Store one night, and she was like, "Oh, right."
Good. She didn't remember it specifically. It's a horrible thing.
She was so sweet. Yeah. It was so nice.
Well, look, man, I mean, you know, there's liabilities to being a cool kid, too. Like, when I started being with her, she was like, "Yeah, I don't like Led Zeppelin." I'm like, "What? How's that? Like, I don't even understand what you just said." And I'm like, "Have you ever listened to it?" And she's like, "Well, it was around when I was in high school and stuff, but I was just not, that wasn't my thing." I'm like, "What? Let me give you some Led Zeppelin." So, like, within 6 months of being with me, she's like, "This Led Zeppelin is good."
Oh, really? You swayed her?
Of course. Of course. I mean, it's like, it speaks for itself.
Yeah.
But, you know, she came up in the time where, you know, there were two camps.
Right.
She's a little, she's like, was your age more, you know, I'm a few years younger. So when I'm in high school, you know, new wave or punk, you know, was just sort of just coming in. So, you know, at that time it was either disco or rock that had been around since the late 60s and 70s, so that's what I grew up with. But some people avoided that because, you know, they had The Cure and they had
the,
you know,
Smiths and,
that kind of stuff, or, you know, whatever was going on that happened in college. But I was, you know, radicalized by, you know, 70s rock, and it sticks.
But she was great.
Lynn was great. You know, now that it's a few years, you know, back, you know, it's also weird and unfathomable, you know, that it just happens. But then it just, you know, it just happens, you know, and that
so
between that and COVID, it's like I have no sense of time or you know, it's fucked up my sense of time.
Oh, it fucked up everyone's sense of time. But to have gone through that during that time.
Yeah, I don't know.
Jesus.
All I tried to do was, like, keep my shit together. And but, like, you know, the loss of it is, you know, I think about it all the time. But it just flies by, man, in general. It's weird because I'm going to be 60. And I've always been the kind of person who, you know, says, like, it's not, you know, life isn't flying by. Because that's how I felt. But when now I'm approaching 60, I'm like, this is here now?
Yeah.
It's here. This is here now.
Yeah.
And then you start going like, what happened?
Yeah.
But nothing changed, but it's like, it just becomes more.
And you think about how quick the last 15 went, and then you add it to where the next 15 from here goes.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, no.
I know. And if you're going to be, you know, rational about it, you're like, because, like, my girlfriend now is younger than me, and I'm like, you know, in a few years, I'm gonna be like old, and you're, you know, and you can, you know, like, I'm doing a bit on stage where you can judge, you know, older men dating younger women however you want, but ultimately, it's gonna get to a point where I'm gonna have to go, like, you know, you can go. I understand. We knew this was gonna happen, but, like, it seems like you got a little juice left.
When she sees you trying to read your pill bottle and you can't, how much younger?
She's 34.
Oh, man.
It's young, but it's not.
That's a great age.
Yeah, and she doesn't want to have kids. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's been there for me. in a fairly difficult time, and you know, it's evolved into something very sweet. Mm-hmm. But I know it's. I said something on stage last night that I think is. I think it got a good laugh, and I was just riffing, you know. Mm. But I always sort of half apologize for dating younger women, you know, because I'm like, I said last night, I'm not looking for it. I've dated women of different ages. I've dated age appropriate. I've dated almost age appropriate, and I've dated younger.
It's just random at this point. Yeah.
Well, it's life I live, you know.
When you talked in your act about, I think you used the word mystical.
Yeah.
When someone passes, you can't help but...
Go mystical.
Go mystical.
Yeah.
Is there a part of you with that or with your age? Is there any part that's more religious?
No.
You don't lean into that part at all?
No, I don't, because it's still sort of practical. I'm doing a pretty big bit now about, you know, passing out at the top of the hill that I hike.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and also it's kind of tied in with, you know, trying to listen to Taylor Swift and then hearing a song on this record that, you know, made me, you know, activated my grief, but kind of carried it in that sweet way that music can, and playing it on a loop and stuff. But there is this, you know, when Lynn died so quickly... You know, the loss is significant because she was a very charismatic person, and anybody's loss is significant.
Yeah.
And it's devastating because there's a, you know, it's a real absence.
It's
and
the
you
goodbye.
Kind of feel that. And it happens abruptly, and it's, you know, and it's terrible. And it is so not unusual, other than tragedy. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to lose someone tragically. But like when I passed out, I had this moment where, like, you know, when you pass out, I don't know if you've ever passed out.
Yeah.
Well, it's like I kind of felt it coming. It happens, like, because I stretch and, like, uh-huh. It was like a head rushing.
Yeah,
but I went down.
Uh-huh.
And, like, I wouldn't have known it if I hadn't come to. Do you know what I mean? Like,
right.
it's just nothing.
Right.
Like, there was nothing. And you know, and when I came to, I was like, oh, my God. Mm. Yeah, no idea. So I'm sort of like, well, if that's what it's like, okay. Uh-huh. You know, if it's just nothing,
mm-hmm.
It kind of gave me some peace around her and around, you know.
Interesting.
And I want to project, you know, want to project the souls and everything else. And I still am sort of half mystical. I found a giant feather, you know, like right in front of this door here one day.
Uh-huh.
It was like a crow's feather.
Yeah,
but no, but then, like, you know, I'm not beyond, like, well, I got to look up what the significance
No,
the feather is.
But you take a quiet note of it, like.
No, I did do it. I looked it up.
Oh, you did look it up.
Of course, you know, and it's like it's just that's the way the internet works. There's no sourcing of it. It's
right.
Native Americans. I'm like, oh yeah, that's good.
Yeah,
and it means that someone's still looking over you. I'm like, oh, that works. Good. I'll keep the feather. I'll keep it. So if that's any closer to God, then
yeah.
Why are you closer to God as you get older?
I don't think I'm. I don't. I've always been kind of mystical.
That's different than...
Yeah, but I was raised Catholic, and I've always kind of had this thing of being somewhat aware or trying to be in tune with something beyond.
Mm.
And it's weird. Like, at different stages, I'll pray more or
do you pray, you
meditate
know,
more or...
Meditate, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's always that thing... But I do feel like as I'm getting older, there is, and we're all going by the same brochure.
Yeah.
We all, like, this is very common.
Yeah.
That people kind of, like, start looking back.
When the lights start going out.
Yeah. Yeah, people, and they start to.
Dimming.
Yeah, and they're like, well, what else?
What did it all mean?
Yeah, where are we going? Yeah. And all that kind of thing. Not in any, like I've said, there was a mystical, I always kind of had that sense.
Yeah.
So it hasn't become, like, more intense, but
right.
I don't know. You find myself reading more. I just went through all of Joseph Campbell's interviews.
Oh, wow. Right. So you get the whole spectrum of the mythology.
Six. Yeah, which is but, so great.
But what did that tell you?
That told me that I'm right, that I'm sensing that there's something beyond, that there's another plane of something happening here all the time.
So that's
that
how
humans
you took
are it? That humans are trying to interpret this feeling, and they've mucked it up by trying to nail it down into religion.
Well, that's interesting, because, like, what I would take from the work around mythology and stuff is mm-hmm. that it's sort of, I guess, an inversion of that, which is humans have always had this need. to feel connected. Not that they're just close to breaking the code, but they need to construct something bigger than themselves to find meaning.
But that need, I think, is generated by this weird feeling that we have.
Right, that we're going to die.
Maybe.
So you're saying that the weird feeling is like God's presence, and he's given us the puzzle, or she, or it.
Yeah, it. All right. Not that they've given it. I don't even know if there's a they or that they've given.
Okay, but the sort of the weird need, it's like, how is it so fucking, you know, fragmented and nebulous that every goddamn culture since the beginning of humans has taken a crack at it, but there's still no
they can't do it.
Revelation other than whatever they construct.
It might be just we're hearing a hum. And everyone's like, what is that? It's got to be something bigger. And it may be
it may be
lights out when you pass out at the top of the hill. And that the hum is only present here now, right, when your eyes are open.
Right. But the lights out thing is not terrible.
No.
I think it's relative to our ego dying. That, you know, that it's like it, that you can't just be nothing. Yeah, sure it can. You just ate a hamburger. You know, like, you think that cow had some other destiny? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I just don't, yeah, like, you know, this sort of separation we make, you know, from us and every other living organism on the goddamn planet, that, like, we got to have a special place, right? There's got to be a place where, you know,
where we go.
Yeah. Who the fuck knows where the dog's going? But there's got to be a place for us.
Yeah.
I don't, like, I, yeah. I don't. Like, I don't know if I'm comfortable with it, because, like, now that, like, I'm at this age and, you know, I don't have any major health problems. But, like, when I go to bed at night, I'm like, oh, is this it?
You know, this could be. Yeah, whenever you hear stories now, it's like, dude, how old was that guy?
Always.
52?
Just dropped dead.
Well, all right.
Had he been to the doctor? Yeah, he went all the time. Was he good in shape? Yeah, he was in great shape. Just dropped dead. Fuck. Now I got it.
On his Peloton?
Yeah. I mean, it's, I don't know. I'm going to the doctor tomorrow.
Are you?
Yeah.
Just for the regular?
Yeah, for the regular thing. Well, I've been vegan for like 7 months.
You have?
I have. And because I wanted to see if I could, you know, I didn't have high cholesterol, but I just want to see if it made a difference. And it did.
It did.
And I wonder if it stuck.
How much weight did you lose?
I don't know. I've been working out and stuff. I don't know that I lost a lot of weight. Are you supposed to lose weight?
Yeah, I think so, when you're vegan.
I don't know. Some people gain weight because they just sort of, like, they don't do it right, and they just eat bread.
I don't see you going just eating cookies.
No. Yeah. I try to balance it out. But, like, but I wouldn't say I'm comfortable with death yet. Because, like, for me, though, it's just sort of like, who's going to get the cats? And someone's going to have to clean up. You know, because that's one thing I learned after Lynn passed away, that, and especially during COVID, it was everything I assumed, that what happens is, in the midst of all this tragedy and extreme grief and pain, and whatever anyone's experiencing who had a relationship with her of any kind, is that, like, it really is like, what are we going to do with this stuff? And it's that's rough, man. You know, because she had a lot of the same kind of stuff I had. You know, she had boxes of, like, you know, if you're a keeper of things, which I'm not even sure there's a point to it, but I got boxes upstairs here, you know, with stuff I wrote in high school, with things like art stuff and, like, all this stuff. And I don't have any grand idea that, like, well, maybe it'll be bequeathed to a college
museum,
library. But some people have offered to archive it, but still my insecurity, it doesn't enable me to be like, yeah, you better get this stuff together, because, like, look, they opened a Bob Dylan Center, and, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
So, but ultimately, it's like, you know, you call in family members, and you call in people to sort of determine what that means. And really, a lot of the stuff we keep means something to us. It represents something of our past, something of our evolution. Maybe we think it deserves more attention than it once got. But ultimately, it is part of us. And once that goes, unless you're, you know, a grand person of letters or something, it's a box that a family member is going to go through and go, like, I don't know what this is.
Yeah.
And what are we going to do with it? I don't have any room for this.
It's funny because it all gets whittled down to, well, I'll keep this bookmark.
Right. Yeah, sure. Like, yeah,
this,
yeah.
Like, I love this one cup. Card from him, that one cup from him.
Yeah.
And I'll keep that thing.
Like, that's enough.
Yeah, and that's enough. My sister has, like, three items from my grandmother.
Yeah.
And it is enough.
Yeah, I have my grandmother's melon baller.
Right. Yeah. And that's good.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I don't think, I don't know how much, you know, I guess I carry a lot of that stuff still in my memory. And, you know, and certainly when, you know, we didn't get to have what I thought we were supposed to and destined to have.
Mm-hmm.
But I have stuff of hers and I don't even know what to do with it. Like, I've been struggling with some of that. Like, you know, because, like, ultimately, like, you know, she had people that she had long relationships with, and ours wasn't that long. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know, but I think at this point, a few years later, it's weird if I just sort of, you know, kind of reach out to the few friends of hers that I you know, was in contact with after she passed and said, like, do you want this book? You know, but
you should just send it.
I should just send it, yeah.
That's a nice
Well, right after, I gave her mom a jacket. And, you know, I was kind of, because all the stuff was here and no one was coming down because it was COVID. And
mm-hmm.
So all of the stuff that she thought was important was here.
Right.
It was either in my house or in the house she had rented.
Yeah.
And it was like, it's gnarly stuff. But getting back
weird.
To that dying thing is like, look, man, you know, Saget's death affected me profoundly and more so. Well, obviously, with Lynn, but Lynn sort of primed the pump for the reality of how fleeting this thing is, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, when Saget dropped dead, I'm like, that guy? What the fuck happened? And then, like, no one knows what happened. But the thing that got me the most was that, because he was one of us, and he was a comic. He was on the road.
Omnipresent.
Yeah, but just, like, you know, and a sweet guy. And yeah. Like, it was very shocking to me.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because he died on the road.
Yeah.
You know, in a goddamn hotel room.
I know.
But a couple of things happened because of him dying is that, you know, I went to the funeral, and it was over here at Mount Sinai, which, you know, I drive by it all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the first few weeks, and to this day, like, I was like, you know, he was at home last week. And now he's in a box up on that hill.
Yeah.
And I drive by it every fucking day.
Yeah.
And I can't get past it.
Uh-huh.
That he's just up there laying there. And he was like, you know, he's at home, you know, enjoying whatever. And it's really had this weird, I'm not sure.
Why though? Why him more than?
Because
we've had that happen with other comics.
Because I didn't, you know.
Were you closer to him?
No, but I felt like, because it was surprising.
Right.
And because, like, he was such a sweet guy, and, you know, it wasn't that we were really close, but I felt close to him.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I guess it's because, like, you know, I can't remember. I didn't go to, like, Geraldo's funeral. I didn't go to Patrice's funeral.
Uh-huh.
I didn't go to, you know, like, these guys that we lost earlier on. I can't remember who
Mitch.
Else. Well, Hedberg, like, I don't even know what happened there, but that, you know, but it wasn't like we didn't see that coming. It was terrible, but I didn't go to Mitch's funeral.
Mm-hmm.
But I did go to Bob's because, you know, it's of a generation of guys that I look up to, and maybe that was it. Maybe,
and it's also different. It's also where you're at when these things hit.
Sure. And I think, you know, I think maybe I was avoiding funerals.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't go.
Yeah.
And I don't
think. Perspective
now. I guess that's it. So how's your wife? How's everything with, you know, like, what is the experience
Good.
Of growing these kids up? Because I hear you talking about the kids.
Yeah.
You know, the weed and stuff and, you know, down the hall and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's we kind of did it.
Yeah, you did it.
We did it.
Yeah.
Like, we did the
and
thing.
And they're good kids.
They're good kids.
Yeah.
They're really great, but they don't live with me anymore. I don't have to do the day-to-day.
And that,
like,
and,
that project that 20-year project
right.
of being in the house
yeah.
on, like, running that corporation, it's now shifted. It's
And you were ready for that?
Spit out the other end.
Were you ready for it?
I didn't understand it with the first one when she left. I was like, this makes no sense.
You just have to let them go be people?
You just have to let them go. And I had a thing in my act where it's like, I didn't, wait a minute. Like, I did all of this for you. I didn't want this house. I didn't want these animals. I don't even have friends. All my friends are your friends' parents.
Yeah.
And now you're going to go? I should go. I was like, well, this makes no sense at all.
Yeah.
And it really threw me. But now, after seeing the rhythm of that, and then she comes back for a little bit, and we hang, and we go see her someplace else, and it's natural. And
right.
So now with my next one just left last week.
Yeah.
It was a lot more like, yeah, this is the way it's supposed to go.
And I guess then you start to look forward to, you know, what her life's going to be as an adult.
Yeah.
In a way.
And your life comes back.
Yeah, well, what's that look like? I know that people start doing comedy again, but you never left.
I never left.
You know those guys that are sort of like, well,
I guess I'll go on the road.
It's like, I might want to spruce up the act a little bit.
Just the mental space of being in your house without having to worry about anybody but myself and the dog.
Yeah.
You know, my wife.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, sure. There is a mental burden that you carry and that with a family.
That, but that eases?
Yeah.
Because, like, for me, like, that's, like, I don't know how people don't continue worrying more.
You worry in bigger ways. Like, I'm worried about them
But I guess the
worries don't stop, but the day-to-day minutia of, are they coming down the hall? Are they okay right now?
Yeah.
But can
we have sex now?
I literally just got up out of bed and no clothes on.
Yeah.
And like walk down the hall, let the dog out, walk down to my backyard and just hands on my hip, like,
Finally.
Yeah. Finally. And then you catch yourself in the mirror you're like, Lee, let's put some clothes on just to be by myself. But
I guess if you know that, you know, like if you've instilled, if you've done the best you could and they turned out to be level-headed people, that, you know, there is a trust that evolves that they'll take care of themselves. Like I imagine the general panic. Like I can't even, my parents couldn't even handle, you know, I had to call my parents, you know, anytime I was out, if I was going to be later than a certain time. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's normal. But
it's normal, but that's why they have to go. It's like, they're like these women now in my house.
Yeah.
And I have to get up early and do something.
Yeah.
I can't fall asleep until you're home.
Yeah.
And then they don't want to tell you when they're coming home because they're women.
Right.
They're grown people.
Yeah.
Why should I have to tell you when I'm coming home?
Can't you say, because it's still my house.
We're roommates. Yeah. We're roommates now. You're just being a bad roommate.
Yeah.
So it gets to a point where you're like, all right, you got to go.
Yeah. And are they having fun out there?
Yeah, it seems like it. The first one, the second one is, my first one's going to be done with school. She's going to graduate.
What's her degree in?
American Studies. Seems like she's writer, arts kind of person.
Good. That's practical.
Yeah. It worked for us.
It did it.
Kind
of. We were lucky.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, we worked hard, but like, you know, when you really look at the big picture, it's sort of like, oh my God.
I know.
I mean, I barely pulled it out.
I know.
It was like, it was not looking good.
Yeah, I know. I don't know.
But yeah.
All of that stuff, like big stuff worries is like,
yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, my other one, like I said, just left. So she's like kind of in that freak out freshman, like,
oh, yeah,
who's going to be my friends? And I'm sleeping in a strange place. And
yeah.
But
are they close or far?
They're far. They're both East Coast.
Oh, wow.
But we're back there all the time. And
yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, your worries, you never stop. Like, as long as you love people, there's worries.
Yeah.
I worry about my parents. I worry about my sisters. There's always worry. But
yeah, I don't like, yeah.
You got to kind of let go.
I don't seem to worry about people as much as, you know, the bigger picture of the world and, you know, my own fucking insanity. Like, I'm trying to do this joke where the idea is like, I wish I had, you know, more control of my imagination because what it does on its own is not great.
It's so funny because when I just saw a quote about imagination, like, don't let your imagination die. And they were saying it in the way of, like, when I think of imagination, it's something fantastical rainbows and whatever. Yeah. And yours is going off.
It's just sort of like
the dark side of town.
Oh, yeah. How am I going to get fucked? You know, what's going to fuck? I literally sometimes just think about like if I'm driving, I have to fight the idea that I'm going to be T-boned in the middle of an intersection.
And so in your act, when you talk about those two old guys on the bench of different ways that you can be old, and there's the one guy who's like real grateful looking at the water, and then there's the other guy going to be like, well, that didn't work out.
Yeah.
I have no fucking money.
Yeah.
Which guy are you?
I'm not like that because things did work out, but I'm not totally at peace. But there is sort of a cranking of dread.
Yeah,
you know that I seem to lock in and attach anxiety to everything.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say I'm going to be angry and bitter, but but like it'll be like I'm just going to sit here and look at the water, but it doesn't look the way it used to. I mean, it doesn't. You know, it's.
I feel like on your head, on your tombstone, it's going to say, "I told you."
I don't. Yeah, yeah. I was right. We'll see. So, yeah. So where can people? What do you got? A website?
I think yeah,
we got the full arc.
I got a new website.
We're at a tombstone, so seems like a reasonable place to end.
We're at tombstones and websites. Yeah, mine's tompapa.com.
And there, all the tour dates are there?
All the tour dates. My new book. Yeah.
That's the, it's a,
we're all in this together, so make some room. Yeah.
Those are essays about cats, life. Kids, life,
yeah.
Things. You have cats?
I do have a cat.
I
have one cat and two dogs, and I'm all team cat. After careful analysis of living with all of them,
yeah,
I am way in on cat.
I got three.
They're the best.
But like now that the more frightening thing is like one of these might outlive me.
Yeah, I know. Dude, I just passed out on the top of the hill.
Yeah, I got a one-year-old kitten. That guy's going to have a new owner.
We have a lizard that has a life expectancy of 50 years. Oh, and it's like, well.
What's going to happen to a lizard?
Yeah.
What kind of lizard?
A gecko.
Whose is that?
It was my daughter's whim when she was six.
And you still have it?
Yeah. My wife is really an animal lover. And
so what's the gecko do?
Just hangs out on a branch and waits to be sprayed.
We can only hope.
It's got huge balls on it.
We can only hope for that life, to have huge balls, to lay on a twig and wait to be sprayed.
Every once in a while.
And fed bugs.
Yeah. Crickets on a good day, paste on regular days.
Oh, looking forward to those crickets. All right, buddy. It was good seeing you.
You too.
All right, folks. Wasn't that lovely? The lovely Tom Papa. You can go to tompapa.com for his tour dates and get his book, his new book. We're all in this together, so make some room wherever you get books. And now I need you to hang out for a second. Do 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 beep boop 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 papa beep. This Thursday, we'll have my talk with Arnold Schwarzenegger. If you're a full Marin subscriber, we've got some Arnold bonus episodes to get you ready. Last Friday, Brendan and Chris did an episode on Arnold's movies.
The best Arnold movies recognize this man is like a Greek god on earth. And that's what this movie does. Richard Dawson sees the TV. He's like, who is that? That's my next running man. Because he is a Greek god running around. I mean, that's what makes...
Well, then it makes more sense that he turns babyface to the audience.
Yes.
That they're like, they go, you know, which one do you want to bet on next time? And the old lady's like, oh, Ben Richards. He's a bad motherfucker.
Amazing.
That's available right now. Tomorrow, for full Marin subscribers, you'll hear my reaction to the Arnold talk right after he left the garage. That's all in advance of the Arnold WTF episode this Thursday. To subscribe to the full Marin, go to the episode description and click on the link, or go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. Here I am trying to open it up a little bit with the slide. It's a little clunky, but I'm starting to feel it. I'm starting to feel it. Feel it.
lives. Monkey and LaFonda, cat angels everywhere.